Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Kabaza, and for today, we're going to get into what I think is a continuation of a conversation that we've been having, on this particular platform, and that is a conversation, around the creative industries, in South Africa. We've actually had a number of conversations on this platform recently. I think most recently we've been attacking it from a the industry, at least independent players, not being happy about what's going on in terms of the rebate discussion and that type of thing. And one of the things that has come out of those discussions is to say that we are possibly hindering a lot of investment in that particular space in the country with some of those policies. But there is it does seem as if people are still investing, and we recently got news of a big project that is combining gaming, TV, as well as film. And the ticket size on that project is $100 million, and depending on when you're listening to this, that's roughly 1.8-1.9 billion rand, at the current exchange rate. And the firm that is behind that is Talent 10, and we're just going to be chatting around what all of that what all of that means for us in terms of that space. And we are joined by the team from Talent 10. We've got director of Talent 10, that is Mickey Wostenholm, and he's just going to be giving us some insight into all of that. Mickey, greetings to you today.
Good afternoon, Mudiwa. Nice to be on your show. Thank you for having me.
So let's get started into, obviously we're having a discussion about that big project that you guys are working on. But maybe before we start talking about that specific project, Talent 10, what's the elevator pitch on Talent 10?
Sure, Mudiwa. Talent 10 is an investment holding company / family office that was set up around 10 years ago. Its primary shareholders are Sipho Nkosi, Mkhalisi Mgojo, Dr. Humphrey Marte, and Wayne Fitzjohn, and then a couple of others, but they're the majority of the business. And really, they set up something that was a diversified portfolio beyond where the core shareholders had historically made some of their wealth, which is in Exxaro through mining, through coal, etc. So this was an opportunity to reinvest in a space that was very diversified away from their core coal / mining resource knowledge into something that was more IP related and early stage investing. So, our portfolio comprises of a number of different assets. We've got technology in there in a business called IoT.next, which is an IoT platform, or an AIoT platform now with AI involved. We've got gaming, as we're going to talk about now. We've got content, which we'll discuss now. We've got an HVAC business, which is regionalized at this point down in the Western Cape. We are a shareholder in Pineapple Insurance. We are a shareholder in an Australian exploration company called Kinetico, which is a gas exploration business and has recently done their first gas to power project, or proven concept of that. That was last week, and a number of other smaller initiatives that we are looking at. But normally, as a consequence of where we've come from, we focused on earlier stage things, hence the gaming, hence the content, something that you really created from nothing rather than going into established businesses like your core private equity would do. So we differentiate ourselves from core private equity in that we don't look at, well, when I say we don't look at, we look at everything. But our core focus historically has been an earlier stage investments, giving us the opportunity to create an industry.
Can I confirm that when you say IoT.next, is that the one that is also affiliated with Vodacom?
That's correct. Vodacom is a 65% shareholder. We're the 35% shareholder in that. So together we manage that business.
Okay, cool. Yeah, because as soon as you said that one, I was like, ah, that's a name. that's a name that that's a name that I definitely know. So with that in mind then, right? What is the rationale for getting to what's the word I'm looking for? Putting so much money into what is essentially a film and TV project. Right. Because everything else that you've just described, would sort of go more towards the side of being, I think, leaning more towards technology types of businesses. What was the draw here, for you guys to get into, something like this? And especially, entertainment type properties that tend to carry a bit of a risk profile, against them.
Yeah, I mean that philosophy and that way of thinking goes back. IoT was the first IP platform that we got involved in, and it was during that stage, in the early stages of IoT, where we also started looking at content. And we wanted to, we were watching what we wanted to achieve in South Africa. It was a strong ambition of our shareholders that whatever we did needed to be a South African focused entity, to develop and create things in South Africa for obvious reasons. It's to try and uplift the economy, uplift the country, and to try and create industry where maybe it didn't exist before. And a lot of your traditional businesses are exactly that. They're traditional, they exist, they're competitive, and they operate in very competitive spaces. So if you look at where the global trend is at the moment, everyone is trying to be competitive. And the core way of doing that, or one of the easiest way of doing that, is to cut down on headcount, to cut on your salary bill, to try and be more competitive and enhance margin. And for a country like South Africa, which has such a high unemployment rate, that's not typically an area that is of interest to us for that reason. We wanted to go out, be bold, create industries where they didn't exist, and therefore create employment and create a factor that would draw people into South Africa, and more money coming in, whether it be through investment, i.e. into the content space, or whether that in itself creates other avenues, which you know it does through a multiplier effect, and we can get onto that later. But I mean, just tourism in itself, exposing the country to the world. I think everyone knows it anyway, but a lot of people haven't historically wanted to come here for various reasons, and creating industries like this, like the film space, and bringing people into the country and creating the opportunity to drive employment out of that is something that we're very passionate about.
You guys have worked on this particular project called Boy Kills World with the IDC, that is the Industrial Development Corporation. IDC has been a supporter of these types of projects for a number of years. I often see their logo at the end of a number of local productions. In your view, right, when an investment company invests in a, let's talk firstly about the film and TV aspect, because I think the economics for that are slightly different to the gaming side of things. So I'll start there. When you're approaching a project like that, where there's a project and it's only revenue generating when the project is completing. It's not like you start working and you're building your revenue stream, build bit by bit and you're scaling or anything like that. You sort of have to put, all the capital down, make the whole project, and then you start trying to recoup yourself back. From that point of view, how do you think about it? And especially because you guys have, at least from what you're sounding like, have been exposing yourselves to a lot of venture capital types of things. So when you think of a film project, do you think about it in the context of venture capital, project financing? Do you think about it in the context of private equity? Like, what is the mindset of an investor in a film project?
It's actually all of those. You look at it on a project basis and say, this is what we want to achieve in the content space. And we didn't just start with a big, bang like Boy Kills World, which is an expensive production for South African standards, as you know. We started much smaller. Our first movie was a much smaller production called I Am All Girls. It was a completely local cast and crew shot obviously in South Africa, much smaller budget. And we then learnt the ropes on how to distribute the product. Because at the end of the day, we all know the biggest success for any industry is your ability to get product to market. So you can have the best product in the world, no matter what it is. It might be a resource. It might be a widget. It might be technology. It might be gaming. It might be content, whatever. To get the product to the market, i.e. distribution, is the hardest part of the channel. So you can build what you want, but then you've got to get to understand how to reach your target audience. And we learned that on our first project, I'm All Girls. That was a production that we did that we sold to Netflix. And it was very much a streaming-based product where you get your money up front. You obviously create the content. You then have the IP of the asset. And then you sell it once off. But it's not once off, because that production or the ability to stream for Netflix only lasts for 3 years locally, or 3 years internationally, 7 years locally. And they have obviously their strings attached. But it got us a good understanding of what the audience wanted, because with that particular production, I'm All Girls, we reached number two in the US and I think number two or three in Canada and a number of other jurisdictions that Netflix stream into. We were very high up in their weekly kind of rankings worldwide. So we were incredibly proud of that. But it got us onto our next movie, which was called Redeeming Love. And again, that was something that was a much bigger budget. It was in international, mainly a US director, US cast, and SA crew. We still filmed it completely in South Africa. But then we had to learn a different distribution model. We had done the distribution through streaming. Now we had to learn what Hollywood is all about. Because at the end of the day, if you want to maximize your return on a production, it's around getting it to the audience. And that is through theaters in the US. They still dominate 80% of world theatrical releases of content. And that was a challenge for us. We learned a lot through that process. We learned what to do, what not to do. And I think that in that particular learning, if I can summarize that, it was simply that you can't have what I call a single varietal, a single product. Which Redeeming Love was. There was no opportunity to scale from that. And when I say scale, to create a prequel or a sequel or a game, it was just a movie called Redeeming Love. And as phenomenal as it was and well shot in South Africa, it didn't have the ability to expand. So the next one we did, and again, looking at it as a project base, coming on to your question about did we look at it as private equity or venture capital, it's all project based. We decided to do Boy Kills World, which had the opportunity to create a franchise, a universe, if you will. So we learned that, we've seen what Disney's done with Marvel. We understand that once you've created that universe, you've already created a viewership base. So you're not starting from zero every single time you do it. You're starting from an audience that already likes and understands you. So what we've done with Boy Kills World is we've created the content, we've created the universe, and we've created an opportunity that allows us to do prequels, sequels, gaming. As you've seen, the Super Dragon Punch Force 3 game is inspired from the 2D fighting game that's featured within the Boy Kills World movie, and that's got legs of its own now. So there's a whole universe that we can create around Boy Kills World, and that for us is the opportunity that we wanted to generate out of this, and that is what the documents at $100 million is for. It's not day one, here's $100 million, wow, boom, we're going to create a universe. It's to say, guys, this might take a couple of years, it might take 5 years, but we know where we want to get to with this, and we're going to create the universe, and we're going to do it from here in South Africa with our local expertise and industries.
Are you able to sharing whatever you can share with us, maybe give us a breakdown of what that looks like, because at least to my understanding, this universe that you guys have created, with Boy Kills World, allows you guys, obviously you've got the film, you've already spoken about a universe that you can create for potential sequels or spin-offs, and then you've got a gaming property inside there, as well as I understand a TV series as well, right? Are you able to give us a breakdown of what that $100 million looks like between all of those different properties?
Not at this stage, Moody. It's not sort of set in stone and targeted along certain avenues that we want to progress on. But if you look at where we are now, we've done the Boy Kills World and we've created what we see as our universe. The next one coming out of that, the next part of that expenditure goes into developing the game. And that actually released on the same time, at the same time as the release of Boy Kills World. Again, just to get your audience, you've got to distribute it. And if you're leveraging off the same marketing spend for movie and game, and they're so interlinked, you want to get to the same audience. So we're developing that at the moment. It's a live service game, which means that as we go on with the game, we reiterate according to what our audience wants and demands and you know expects to see. We continually develop that. We continually drop in new characters, whatever it might be. Some will be completely separate to what you've seen in Boy Kills World. In fact, the only two characters that have a sort of a link into what you've seen in Boy Kills World. But what that allows us to do with the rest of the characters, and this speaks to what you asked about, the TV series, we're creating an animated series. It may not be for TV, it will be through streaming. We don't know exactly how we're going to distribute that, but it's going to be an introduction into all the characters within the game. So that's going to be a project that'll be a couple of years of developing those, because each of these animated series, whether they are half an hour, 45 minutes, it's a long lead time into all of them. You've got to create your storybook, exactly how you want it to look, figure out where you want to distribute it to, who your audience is, but at the same time, always understanding that you're developing that core target market and that universe. So if you can start creating those characters to speak back to Super Dragon Punch Force game, and then that speaks back to Boy Kills World, people will be interested in the entire universe and start cross-pollinating the advertising spend.
Curious to understand something. Obviously, it would be nice if you have, a core fan base that understands the linkages between, all of the different properties, where the intersections are and that type of thing. But do you anticipate, at least from the work that you've done, that beyond that core fan base, do you see yourselves continuing to attract, I guess, people that understand all of those linkages, or do you over time end up having, I guess, completely separate, markets for the various, for the various properties?
Well, I think in the universe, in the franchise that we've created out of Boy Kills World, it's going to be a very similar audience base, purely because, once you've marketed to them, it's a lot of money being spent into what they call in the movies P&A, and in gaming, it's your core marketing spend. That if you can put that into one pot and market to both, it obviously gets to a much bigger reach. And if you just look at, a lot of people wonder why gaming for us. We were in the midst of lockdown. We had just finished shooting our second movie, Redeeming Love. And we're all sitting at home and we're all worried about COVID and everyone is on Teams meetings like we were 3 years ago or whenever that was. And our CEO, Wayne Fitzjohn, said to us as a team, we're just actually in the conversation before, said, right, guys, we're all taking salary cuts because that's what we do in COVID. Things are tight. Everyone needs to tighten their belts and expect a bit of pain. We all agreed, okay, fine. We have to accept that is the way that it needs to be for the next, foreseeable future. But what is the next industry that we can target based on our learnings from what's happened in the couple of months that we've seen in COVID? And gaming was a strong sector that came out, and it was primarily proposed by Wayne himself. The rest of us were a little bit nervous of that, not really knowing much about the industry and having had the opportunity to research it. But the moment you go into it, you realize, just if I put some numbers to you now, so you get, it sort of contextualizes it a bit for you, but gaming currently is about a $250 billion revenue industry. And mobile gaming is half of that, so call it 125. If you look at just mobile gaming, that is the size of the entire content, slash film production, TV, et cetera, and music combined, just for mobile gaming. So, and if you double that on PC and console, now you've got something that is twice the size of movies and of music, and that is set to grow at a pretty high CAGR, getting to about 460 odd million in 4 years' time. So we looked at those stats and we said, okay, this is something that, to one of your points earlier, if you build it now, create that IP, you spend it once. It's not like your traditional industry where every time you make a widget, there's a variable cost associated to that. This, you have a large upfront cost with no revenue base, but you know what your fixed cost base is probably going to be. And then it's about distributing that and repeat selling it so that you have that IP base and you continually sell it to now have an asset that needs very little work done on, but it continues to stream revenue for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it certainly sounds like, I guess, a good, to use the marketing speak, a good funnel, through which to channel, I guess, your customer base. And as you were talking, one of the things I was thinking about is the fact that, IP is one of those, I guess, underrated things that we don't often talk about, at least within the context of the creative and cultural industries, and the fact that there's a lot of revenue streams that you can actually tap into, just from one particular property. Like you said, you have the sunk cost of, the initial development, and then there's a lot of ancillary revenue streams that you can create beyond that. And when it comes to those revenue streams, I wanted to maybe take a second to dive a little bit deeper into one of the ones that you mentioned just now. For the first movie, you talked about selling something like that to Netflix, right? Maybe from a point of education, right? Does that sale to Netflix, and it's two things that I'm curious about, for you guys specifically, is that selling the entire project, rights and all, to a Netflix? Or is that, a licensing type of agreement for them to have it on their platform for a certain period of time?
So it's absolutely the latter. For us, once we've created that IP, that is ours. Unless it's, it invariably creates more value once you've got a slate of multiple titles on as a portfolio that you can sell at a point in time if we ever wanted to. But at this point in time, it's about IP creation. So we want to have and own all of that IP. So it's only a licensing agreement with Netflix where they've got the rights to sell locally in South Africa. No one can touch them for 7 years, I think it is, and internationally for 3 years. But once that term expires, then you enter into a new negotiation. And that's the beauty of it. It's got a tail that continually gives you the opportunity to figure out another way of getting this to market to maximize return. But the streaming players are, like everything I suppose we've seen in the last 5 or 10 years, have been extremely disruptive on the content space in a good way, where historically, to go and see good movies, you'd have to go and see them definitely in theater, go and watch the theatrical release and go to a cinema and watch it. And if you didn't, you'd wait for a couple of months for it to come out in DVD, and then you'd have to go to your DVD shop and streaming just, or then terrestrial TV, it would just take forever to get there, because that's part of, the revenue generation. You've got to keep it as exclusive as possible for as long as possible. Whereas the streamers have now come into play where they are so hungry for content that it's a very real future distribution strategy for us, where maybe theaters is not the best route to go anymore. Do people want to go and, get dressed up, go and drive half an hour to a theater, go and wait in queues, go and, buy popcorn? And I mean, it is a great day out, but you've really got, the half movie buffs, I call them half movie buffs, because the full movie buffs will always love that. The half movie buffs might just think, I'd rather make some popcorn at home, kick my feet up, take my shoes off and pop Apple TV on and just rent it or just stream something that's been on Netflix for a year. For them to see the latest stuff that's come out, they only have to wait a couple of weeks, and it's, from the date it was released to seeing it on their TV, and it's often a lot more convenient for them. So very, very interesting change in dynamics in how content is released at the moment.
Yeah, very, very, very interesting. And especially because so much has been said about, the impact of some of the streaming services, especially as it pertains to the unit economics of making your money back once you've sunk money into a project like that.
Yeah.
For you guys as Talent 10 then, in this particular case, for a project like Boy Kills World, you've gone in in partnership with someone like IDC. I mentioned earlier on that IDC has been supporting these types of projects for some time. In that context, what's the mechanism? What is the agreement, you know, between yourselves? You know, who's lifting what, you know, in that project?
So Modiba, this one was easier for us in that we've had a long relationship with the IDC, being a venture capitalist, being guys that invest in a number of different spaces. You know, we've always spoken to them about numerous projects that we've done. I mean, IoT was one that we spoke for a while on, didn't end up doing anything with them. It ended up being Vodacom, but you know, that's the way these deals work. And I think the beauty of what happened with the IDC is that it wasn't something that we approached them to say, right, guys, here's what we want to do. Here's a great movie that we think is going to create a franchise and a universe for us, and we want to expand on it. But you need to put money in, and we're going to put money in, and then we're going to do it. We realized that the way we wanted to operate and the way they wanted to operate didn't allow for that. So we did it anyway. We're always going to do it anyway. We didn't necessarily need a partner. We don't need a partner. But we wanted the IDC on board at some point in time because we believed our drivers and our strategy is the same. You know, they want economic growth in South Africa. They want to create employment. Very similar to us. We want, you know, we're not philanthropic that we do everything for free, but we want to create industries in South Africa that we believe will be profitable. That's what we want to achieve. So we ended up doing it. And we had been speaking to the IDC on it, but it only really gained traction when they realized how serious we were about achieving what we wanted. Because when we finally did the deal with them, we had already finalized and shot Boy Kills World. So they could actually watch the movie. And from there, you know, there's still a long road that you have to travel in terms of getting it to market. But at least they understood that we weren't relying on them to create this opportunity. We were going to do it. And they were going to be real partners on our side. So they invested direct equity alongside us. And I think we do the heavy lifting just by virtue of the fact that it's our space. We know what we want to achieve. We know how we're going to get there. We know what the franchise looks like. We know what the universe looks like. We know where we want them to play and how they want to come along. And we know that everything we do will be completely with them in mind. So, you know, whenever we monetize anything out of our strategy in terms of foreign sales or domestically or whatever, we know we treat it, you know, with the IDC in mind, it's completely clean. It's a separate PTY limited, which can be audited at any point in time. But the main thing is that we have a relationship with them where there's complete trust. They know that we're going to do what is right for the business and for the franchise.
All right. And I want to get specifically into, I guess, some of the properties. And I say properties, specifically Boy Kills World, because I haven't had an opportunity to consume you know, the game as yet, but specifically for Boy Kills World, and especially because there's a strategic intent behind the storyline, because obviously you're creating a universe, you're creating characters, and we've already spoken about the potential for some of those things to, you know, to come along the way. So it's two things on the storyline. Firstly, we've just spoken about the fact that you worked on this with IDC. They come on board. You guys have already shot this project. You already have something to show them, you know, at the time in which they get involved. What's their reaction, you know, to the storyline? Because I'm just going to describe the storyline as being Quentin Tarantino, John Wick,
Kill Bill,
Kill Bill-esque, you know, yeah. In its, yeah, so, yeah, yeah. So, firstly, curious on how IDC, I guess, reacted to it when they saw it. And I guess for yourselves, you know, the decision, you know, to take, you know, such an approach when creating the movie.
So I'll answer the second half first, because I think when we got the script for it, we realized, and having come off Redeeming Love, we realized we needed something that had more opportunity to create this universe and create the different revenue streams, being the animations, the merchandising, the sequel, all the stuff we've spoken about, the gaming. But you know, does that always mean, I suppose it's like anything, do you always invest in something that you like? Probably not. You've got to invest in things that you believe will make you money. and be successful. So when I read the script for Boy Kills World, I thought, wow, that's interesting. I didn't, you know, it was very cool because it was humorous. When you read it, it's a very different experience to viewing it. And then once we had the finished product, you know, I realized that it's not necessarily everyone's genre of movie. There's no question about that. You know, it's mainly geared for the, you know, for the anime type individual who is slightly cultish, gamish, you know, comedic violence, you know, all that kind of stuff, which is awesome. But the reaction, and to answer the first part of your question, the reaction is very humorous when you take the likes of our shareholders to watch it, you know, watching Sipo, Khaleesi and Humphrey watch this movie for the first time when you know it's clearly not their genre. They just come out and say, wow, you know, we did that in South Africa. That's amazing. It's more about what you've done than the actual content. And I think the same with the IDC. When the IDC came along, there were people who said, yeah, that's not my genre, but I really dig it. And there are others who came out saying, wow, that is unbelievable. I could watch that another three times. So everyone's got their own vibe as to what they like watching. But I think I think it hits the box for most people. If you the elements of it, whether it be comedic, whether it's the violence, whether it's the action, whether it's the story, it's just a cool piece of content that's been created, and very different reactions from all.
Okay, I can imagine a mixed bag. I went to a screening, you know, recently, and yeah, everyone had a different had a different reaction. Yeah. For some, it's a bit too much,
yeah.
And you know they, you know, in a literal sense, can't stomach. But for others, if you're into, you know, that type of movie, I've, you know, watched a number of movies, you know, in that vein, you know, which is why I think I was like, okay, cool, I see what's happening here. And then others, you know, funny enough, there were a couple of youngsters that were there that I've worked with before. And, you know, just asking them their reaction, they interestingly had the same reaction that you've just described, that Sipo and them had, where they literally said, oh my goodness, I can't believe that something with that quality of production was produced in South Africa. You know, so I guess the mixed reactions is something that is... that is, I guess, universal to how people receive something like this.
Absolutely. And I think what is beautiful about it, and to your comment there, is that we are so blessed in this country with such a strong and rich cultural heritage, with unbelievable landscapes, that, you know, for any director or producer looking to shoot a movie with multi sort of set requirements, they pretty much get everything they need in South Africa. The ability to create any set is unbelievable in the Cape Town film studios, obviously Joburg and Durban and or everywhere. I mean, we know that Tom Cruise was in Hoedspruit doing stuff a little while ago. So you really do have the diverse heritage and landscapes to do everything. And, you know, you couple that with the incentive program that the government's got in place where you can get your rebate if you comply with the guidelines and the requirements. And that definitely helps. So if we can get all of that going, and I think it's important to mention the multiplier effects, because a lot of people don't realize this, but it's not just creating content in this country and you then export it and it travels to the US and there's no feedback, you know, feedback in inverted commas back to South Africa, because there definitely is. For every rand spent in the content space or the film industry, it's got a 3x multiplier on the GDP, which means an additional 3 rand goes into the GDP, which is probably about a rand higher than the average of the other industries. And likewise with job creation, for every million rand that you spend in the movie sector, in the content space in South Africa, it creates around 6 jobs. Now, that's, you know, those aren't jobs that, some of those jobs, you know, these are new jobs. So it's not the jobs that come and go depending on the scalability of the project and the you know, when the requirement is. It's actual new facilities that are set up now to service that ongoing industry. And if we can continue to do that and build that space up, you know, I spoke earlier about everyone else is trying to be competitive in most industries. And to be competitive, you cut costs and headcount's one of those. We're creating something where there isn't necessarily an industry. I mean, there's an outsourcing of space, if you want to call it that, historically, where guys come and shoot you and leave. But the more you do this and the more people that come in, you're going to have an industry around that, like Hollywood's created, like Weta Digital created in New Zealand on the back of Peter Jackson's movies. There's a lot of, I mean, that now is a couple of $1 billion value on as an enterprise just created out of shooting movies in you know, based on The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings, etc., in New Zealand. So the opportunities are immense. Is it risky? Sure, absolutely. But you know, you've got to be bold. You've got to do things that other people don't do or are scared of doing or haven't thought of doing, and you've got to commit. And I think that's why when we look at the number that's been thrown around that we're investing into the space, $100 million, over time, it's going to create a big industry. We'll get our, I have no doubt we'll get return on it. But it's not like my analogy is, it's like a test match. You're not going to get your return on the first over of play. You know, your first over is just setting things up, understanding the pitch, the wicket, the conditions, the swing, all that stuff. We're figuring out a lot of stuff, but we're still in the first morning of the first day of a big test match. It's a long way to go, but we're confident. And we're excited about it. That's the main thing. We're excited to explore this industry and make it work.
And maybe just touching a little bit further on the economic benefit bit, you know, you've touched on a number of issues, the multiplier effect, some of the downstream industries that benefit, you know, from this, you know, depending on what numbers. You know, you're looking at, I believe that cultural and creative industries, you're looking at 5 or 6% of GDP, you know, in South Africa. What do you make, you know, of the government's new position on rebates in South Africa? As I said at the beginning, this is something we've spoken to other independent film studios and producers about, a lot of debate, as you can imagine, you know, around, you know, something like this. And for an entity that is actively investing, you know, just keen to get your take on that.
Well, Diwa, did you have to throw this one at me? you know, we were, I mean, we've got a great incentive program. We were very fortunate that that in our three movies, we've got our three rebates from doing those movies. Two of them have been foreign, in Redeeming Love and Boy Kills World. And there we had a much higher cap. We had that we were in the regime or in the dynamic where it was a 50 million cap on your rebate. And we complied with a 25% QSAP on local spend, and we did the extra post production in South Africa, so we got that extra 5%. And we got the full rebate we applied for. We didn't get the full cap because of spend, but. It helped us a lot. And did it help us make the decision to come to South Africa? Sure. For two reasons. Number one, we are South African, and we want to do this in South Africa. And half our drive for creating the space is doing it from South Africa. But it's certainly lubricated by the fact that you have the DTI rebate sitting right next to it, and supporting you getting it. And it's not an easy process getting a DTI rebate, you know, and it's understandable. It's a lot of, you know, where there's money that is effectively being returned to you for doing a project in South Africa, there are going to be a lot of people who try and manipulate that into their favor. So I fully appreciate all the hurdles that are in place to get to the point where they actually distribute the money back to you. We jumped through all those hurdles. It's a long process, but it's a necessary process, and we were successful. They've now changed, and I think this is where you're going with that question, they've now changed that rebate system to not quite be as attractive as it was. I think the cap's now at 25 million as opposed to the 50 that we benefited from. It's sad that, because I think, will it stop us from doing stuff locally? Probably not, but possibly. That's the scary part, possibly. We always wanted to do it from here, and I think we will always do it from here, but we will look at what other options are available to us. But I think it'll have a big impact on international productions that come here that realize, well, you know, France or Italy or New Zealand or Spain or wherever these other, I think Bulgaria's got a big rebate at the moment, wherever these incentives are, it's a big component into the funding of a movie, because a movie is risky. And if you can get some guaranteed return up front, knowing that you have to do certain things and you get, in South Africa, the old one, 50 million back, it's very helpful. You know, 2.5 you know, $2.5 million of your budget is very, very helpful. So I wouldn't say that the decrease of the rebate is dire, but it is going to have an effect. But it's still, you know, I really hope it doesn't, because I think there is a lot of downstream and a lot of benefits that we can contribute into the industry. So it'll be sad if it does have an effect. I really hope it won't have an effect on us. I don't think it will, because we've been successful in the first three. But it's a pity, and I really hope that over time they do review it and maybe get back to a position where maybe it's even healthier than it was. When I say healthier, maybe a bigger number, and they can take it from there. And then guys will invest in it, and guys will definitely want to come back to South Africa and deliver the content.
Yeah, we certainly hope that there'll be a little bit more progress and, I guess, dialogue around something like that, because I think the countries that you were mentioning just now about, you know, the likes of New Zealand, you know, and what Peter Jackson has been able to do just from his films in terms of stimulating an entire industry, sure. You know, it's actually quite incredible. And I guess the employment, the tourism, the, you know, all of these different factors, and including the tax revenue,
yeah,
that is generated from, you know, all of these projects. You know, one just hopes that South Africa, because South Africa probably has the most developed film and TV industry on the continent, and one hopes that, you know, some of these tools, I like the word that you used, you know, these tools are to lubricate, you know, some of those deals and some of those transactions. So Mickey, before I let you go, in my research, I saw that your background is in what I would consider more traditional types of investments. For yourself, what has been the most fascinating part about wrapping your head around, you know, the economics of film and TV projects?
Well, Diwa, I think I like the pioneering of the new or the different industry, which has been a great challenge for me. You know, having come out of more traditional, you know, private equity / investing / funding, you know, or through the banking sectors I've been through, you know, those are very tried and tested. They're very competitive. And they're getting far more competitive. There's a lot of money in the world chasing relatively few deals that are available to be done in private equity. So you've got a hell of a lot of smart guys running around, all doing very similar things. And it creates, you know, I've got to be careful on the words that I choose here, because I think it's a phenomenal industry. And I think the people that play in it are incredibly bright and have the ability to do very well. But I quite liked stepping out of that and going into something that was different. You know, content wasn't necessarily my comfort zone. Gaming almost certainly isn't my comfort zone, you know, not being a gamer. But learning, you know, at the end of the day, businesses are businesses. The dynamics are the same. It's about creating a product, figuring out a route to market, and maximizing return. So it's navigating the different industries, the different sectors, and the different dynamics that exist within each of those businesses. And that excites me. It's something new. It's a learning. It's an industry that I think will benefit South Africa a lot. And it's an industry that is ready to go. As you said, it's the most developed on the continent. I think there's a lot of opportunity that we can do within the continent alone, let alone internationally. But I just find it a very exciting space, something that is evolving like everything. Since COVID, I think, you know, you're seeing Airbnbs displacing hotels and, you know, Ubers displacing taxis. And I think streaming displacing theater. This is where the world is changing, and it's being, you know, it's being open to understanding that and trying to work it to your best benefit to be successful.
So that's where we end off today's discussion. It has really been a great one, just to taking a deep dive into the world of film and TV production and some of the revenue streams that come from such properties, such as gaming. And that is, you know, the setup that Talent 10 has made for itself with their latest release called Boy Kills World. You know, Mickey just giving us some insight into the rationale for putting something like that together. This is their third, film project. And this one is going to come with a TV series property as well as gaming. And Mickey just hinting at the fact that there's even more that could possibly be done, from something like that. And I guess it also feeds into the fact that when you are creating or telling a story, it's not random. There's also, a little bit of strategy that goes into that type of thing. And also just interesting to hear, what it takes to put, some of these projects to get them over the line, within the South African context. And the fact that, projects like this do underscore the fact that South Africa can compete, on a global level when it comes to, producing, projects of this kind. Also talking quite a bit, around some of the economics around putting together some of these film and TV projects. And, what does it actually mean from a funding point of view? Mickey, coming from the world of what are considered to be traditional investments, private equity, banking, that type of thing. But, you now come into a sector like this and, a lot of untapped potential, but there's probably a lot of idiosyncrasies that you have to wrap your head around to actually understand what's going on, the lay of the land, the profession, the downstream, the upstream, the different revenue avenues that IP can go in. And that was also a nice point that we discussed quite a bit, intellectual property, how important it is to own intellectual property and the revenue potential that comes from having good intellectual property, and the fact that there's so much that can be done from there. Ending off, of course, talking about this ongoing debate around rebates in South Africa, and just how much of a multiplier comes from these industries, and just good understanding, some of what it took, someone like Mickey to wrap his own head around, producing content in this respect. So that's been it. We're talking to Mickey Westenholm, who is a director over at Talent 10. Mickey, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Madhu. I've enjoyed our discussion.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.